This is Catherine McNamara, and you're listening to My Dad on All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
I knew my rent was gonna be late about a week ago. I worked my ass off, but I still can't pay so. But I got just enough to get off in this club and have me a good time before my time is up. Hey, let's get it now.
Okay, this is a guy named Pitbull, if you've never seen him. Okay, let me tell you about what this song's about, okay? This is, he's trying to make his rent payment, but he decides that he's not going to make his rent payment, and he's been working his ass off. So what does he do? He goes to the club, and he has a party. Come on. I knew my rent was going to be late about a week ago. I worked my ass off, but I just can't pay it. I think he says dog.
But I got just enough to get off in this club.
Why don't you pay the rent and like ask him if you can give him the late fee later? So you know you're riding around with a 14-year-old and you hear this. It's got a beat, you could dance to it. Like you would hear it on American Bandstand, Raider Record. I think he just said shake that ass. And then you see him and he's all like 5'8". But Pitbull, man, he's global. That's what I want All Marine Radio to be. I want it to be global like Pitbull. I laugh my ass off.
But every day above ground is a great day. Remember that.
See, there's a positive message. My dog, Pitbull. Yeah. All Marine Radio is blowing up, by the way. It's going global. Like Pitbull. All right. Let me read you a text. Are you kidding me? Are you playing Pitbull? Have you lost your mind? Although that shit was pretty funny. Glowing global. Like Pitbull. Yeah, come on, man. Get with it. All right. So let me talk to you about building. Let me talk to you about building this class called Post-Traumatic Winning, okay? Okay. The title in and of itself is designed to be attuned to our culture. And also, much like post-traumatic growth, it's designed to make somebody look at it and say, what? What is this? Because that's what happened to me. I heard the Secretary of Defense, well, actually wasn't the Secretary of Defense. He was just a civilian, Jim Mattis, retired general, talking about it. And so, so when I heard him say post, I prefer, you know, he was asked something about PTSD, and he said, well, you know, I prefer to talk about post-traumatic growth. What did he just say? So to me, but I was looking for a term that captured it, and you know, we're Marines, man. We win. It's why we sign up. It's why we chose door number 4, and you've heard me say that stuff. All right, so the things I like about it, one, if you look at current what's called resiliency training, none of this contradicts any of that. So it's good. Two, post-traumatic winning is steeped in the history of the U.S. military, and it has embedded in it current themes. Keep your honor clean. We got to win. We got to win, all right? But I think what it does that's a little bit groundbreaking is something that has been resident inside of me because of my sister Peggy, okay? And it's always, like, again, the first hugely traumatic event that I experienced is that helicopter crash, right, where you're watching somebody die, and you're trying to save them, and you're trying to help them, and you don't. So, and then in 1996, my nephews are murdered, right? And my sister goes through what she went through. And so it's never been, for me, I always have Peggy's, my thoughts of what my sister's gone through, you know, as a measuring stick. Well, yeah, and then I go to Iraq, and you see what you see in a year there in Ramadi, and all the death that occurs there and all the rest of it, and you have a measuring stick. Yeah, this is rough, but none of us have seen our children get murdered. So one of the things I love, and if you look at suicide, and I've talked about this, you know, somebody kills themselves and we start digging, like, who was that? Why did they kill themselves? Right? He was in Iraq. What year? 2009. What was he doing? He's driving trucks. He's a Motor T guy. So he's driving truck for it. At al-Assad? Yeah. He has a right to kill himself. Okay. That's moderately ignorant. Okay. But I would say it's emblematic of my understanding at the time, okay? And if I pay attention to my sister Peggy and her example, then what that means is that, look, you can have incredibly traumatic events in your life that don't have anything to do with combat. They're still resonant, and they still affect you just as much. So that's why if I walked into a bunch of Marines and said, we're going to talk about PTSD today, what are we talking about? We're talking about combat, right? No, we're not. Does it matter if he got his in combat and he and she got hers in a domestic violence incident? No, mental trauma impacts mental wellness no matter its origin. And so what this does is it takes the red line that separates this is combat and active duty. This is non-combat prior to me coming on active duty. It erases that line. It doesn't matter, right? It doesn't matter. And as I said before, arguably, if you're on active duty, at least you signed up for that stuff, right? Yeah, at least you signed up for it. People that just lived through it, they didn't sign up for anything. My sister didn't sign up for shit. But again, I think it's important to remove that line, and then guess what you get to get a crack at. you get a crack at what's the suicide in the force that is non-combat related, that is most of it as a result of trauma suffered before people joined the Marine Corps, and it puts that in the same category as combat related trauma. Trauma is trauma. Okay. The other thing about the class is it lays out a path that shows you from enlistment through separation, through your career, through being separated, and then returning home. This is the path that you will follow, right, in order to win. Okay. The other thing I like about it is that it's an active approach. We talk about winning. We talk about not being content to coexist. Okay. And in that, it draws on both military examples and civilian examples. Some of the most powerful audio you're going to hear here. You can tell I'm excited about doing this. listen to Elizabeth Smart. Holy shit. And I love the fact that that the class draws from both civilian and military, Marine Corps audio. All right. So it talks about winning. It talks about being active, right, and living with a purpose. I think that is tailored to our approach in the Marine Corps. Post-traumatic winning, the presentation also ought to be given to spouses. Yeah. Hey, you're living with this every day, and some of you might be affected, so absolutely, please attend. Or we'll do a special version of it for you. And then the other piece is, and I alluded to this before, but it's pregnant with topics that can only be treated in a limited way during the presentation that are begging for you to deep dive on them. Hey, let's take that piece of audio and deep dive on it. That is just a small clip of this broader thing. Let's watch the Elizabeth Smart thing. Let's watch the James Stockdale thing. Let's read Struggle Well, right? And so there's all these deep dive things that you can do out of the program. So all that to me, why you should do it. Now let me just play it. So now in beginning to try to put meat on the frame of post-traumatic winning, okay? I would explain to you the path, right? One is you enter the military with everything you have, with all your junk in your trunk, right? Phase two is you stay and you make it a career. Phase three, you transition out, and hopefully you're going to put some effort into making sure that you have your hands around the experience and where you are as a human being. Now, hopefully you've done this throughout, and this is, in my opinion, where the Boulder Crest Retreat stuff comes in, right? It's awesome stuff, okay? If you want to get a gift for somebody who struggles with trauma, go buy them either the audio version or the book itself, Living Well, and tell them to spend some time with it. I've done it, and it's helping me, right? I'm going through the book for a second time now, and I'm doing the exercises that they have in there. And one of them is going through your family. Take a blue pen and a red pen. This is what they did good for me. This is what they did bad. And you'll begin to paint the picture of your life, and you'll begin to see things that maybe you didn't see before. So that's the third phase, is getting your hands around it. And then the fourth phase is converting coexisting to winning. How do we do that? How do we do that? How do people that live purpose-driven lives do that? They find purpose in helping others. And you don't have to do All Marine Radio and go around in good classes. Just touch the people. Just share the plain-spoken truth that you know to be real with the people whose lives you cross. Okay? And that is more than enough. That is more than enough. So those are the, that's the mental health path of a warrior. part of it on active duty, part of it post-active duty, with an emphasis on winning. And how do we convert coexisting to winning? We give. We give of ourselves. We give of our experience. We help others. That's when you get the Grinch moments. That's when you're winning. You're making the community better. You're making the country better. You're touching lives, easing pain. Okay, so when you're going to teach that, okay, for instance, you know, keep your honor clean. Now, I know people have heard this Barnado Simpson clip, but listen to it again. Okay, I've spliced a couple of them together. And it's, again, for people that, young people especially, that grow up with YouTube, this would be two video clips strung together. But it's pretty powerful stuff.
I was 19 when I went to Vietnam. I was a rifleman specialist, fourth class. I was trained to kill, but the reality of killing someone is different from training and pulling the trigger. No.
So you knew when you went into the village that if you found women, old men, children, anything that was living, you knew that you were going to have to kill them that day?
Women and children to dogs and cats, yes.
Okay. Women to children, to dogs and cats. That is a direct quote from the company commander when the company commander, Ernest Medina, who just passed away within the last 6 months, when he was asked during the order the previous evening, everybody in the village is going to be VC when we get there, and we will kill them all. Hand went up. Everybody? Anybody left in the village is VC. Got it? Women, children, women to children, dogs to cats. That's a quote. So significant in his story, right? And remember, he's 18-year-old, 19-year-old, black kid from the South, commanded by white officers in 1968. You going to stand up and say, I ain't doing that? Some did, though.
Yes. But I didn't know it, that I was going to do that. I knew the women and children was there, but for me to say that I was going to kill them, I didn't know I was going to do that until it happened. I didn't know I was going to kill anyone. I didn't want to kill anyone. I wasn't raised up to kill. Yeah. Now, she was running with her back from a tree line, but she was carrying something. I didn't know if it was a weapon or what, but it was a woman. You know, I knew it was a woman. I didn't want to shoot a woman. But I was given an order to shoot. So I'm thinking that she had a weapon running. So when I shot and I turned over, it was a baby. You know, shot her by three or four times. And the bullet just went through and shot the baby too. You know, and I turned over and I saw the baby face where her hair gone. You know? And I just blinked. I just went. The training came to me, the programming to kill. And I just started killing.
What do you mean you just started killing? Did you go looking for people to kill or what?
You didn't have to look. It was there. They was trying to get away. But they was just there. It wasn't hard to kill. It wasn't hard to find anyone to kill. There's a part of me that's kind and gentle. There's another part of me that's evil and destructive. Very evil and destructive. There's more destructiveness in my mind than goodness. There's more wanting to kill or to hurt than to love or to care. I don't let anyone get close to me. The loving feeling or the caring feeling is not there.
And that was caused by me lying, you think?
That was caused by me lying. My little boy ran in my grandmother's front yard here in Jackson. at his grandmother's house. There were some teenagers across the street, got into an argument. It was 14 and 15. And one went home and got a gun. Another one just ran in the direction where my little boy was playing. And he shot. He shot him in the head. I was in the house. And I came out and picked him up. But he was already dead. He was dying. So when I looked at him, his face looked like the same face of the child that I had killed. And I said, this is the punishment for me killing the people that I killed. And when the picture that I had, they had his funeral. The guy back for the funeral that night, that's the way it cracked. And I left it like that. It just cracked.
How much of this stuff do you have?
I take 1,200 milligrams every 4 hours, four times a day, of drugs and medication. I have to take it. I need it. That's the only thing that held me somewhat stable. Not as nervous. I stay nervous, even with the medication. But if I don't take it, I go. I just go off. Just keep me under control. It helps me. Because if I don't, I may do something to someone. Even though I still have a tendency to think that of hurting someone. But the medication helps me, really helps me. But I have to take a lot of it. And it's strong, you know. It's very strong.
Do you think this really dreadful condition that you're in, this terrible life that you're leading, do you think it's ever going to come to an end?
Yeah, when I kill myself, it'll have to come to an end. Like I said, I tried suicide 3 times. Maybe the good Lord is not ready for me to go. Because I could have been dead with all the stuff I had taken and tried to. But eventually, it's not out of my mind. Like I'm sitting talking to you now. I can't promise that when you come again, I'll be here. Because before you came, I had to get out of the hospital from trying suicide for the 3rd time.
The good Lord doesn't appear to have treated you very well, to have put you through all this.
I still believe in him, but I guess life, you live a life for a reason, for a purpose. Now, what that purpose is to have me still here, I don't know.
Are you ashamed? Sorry for what you've done.
Yes, I'm ashamed. I'm sorry. I'm guilty. But I did it. Now what else can I tell you? It happened. You're looking at someone that did. It can happen if you go to war. Those are the type of things will happen and can happen to anyone. After they train you and they program you, it can happen. It happens. That's reality. That's what war is. War is not something that I shoot at you, you shoot at me. Well, we take time out. You know, well, don't shoot me here, don't shoot me there. The war is war. It's killing all type of ways. And that's where we don't need another war.
So you show that clip and you're trying to teach when you come in. You, right now, you young Marines have been taught, keep your honor clean. Do you need another advertisement? Do you need to hear anything else about why you should keep your honor clean? Why you should study your craft, why you should understand what lawful orders are, because you will live with what you do for the rest of your life. And, you know, this stuff is so powerful, right? This stuff is so powerful. Here's a comment on the Marine Corps talking about keep your honor clean in one of his appearances on All Marine Radio.
Are Marines buying keep your honor clean? And
I don't know.
Are they buying it to the point of confrontation where I'll say, no, screw you, Nellard. Do you want to fight? Let's go. But we're not doing that.
It's just like hazing. It's like any other any other behavior we know is wrong, and we, you know, it takes moral courage to do that. And are they buying it? I think most are. But again, you know, you and I got a context. I mean, I just read a quote the other day. It is unfortunate that now that I'm old, I have wisdom. And we consider, and we try to give the young Marines the benefit of our wisdom, and whether they understand it or believe it or not, or whether it's reinforced, I believe it is in most cases. But, I mean, we had Hamdiya, and there was Haditha, but then think of all the other thousands and thousands and thousands of decisions those Marines made over there every day,
right,
where they did exactly the right thing. Right. So, yeah, there were a couple cases where, you know, somebody didn't stand up. And, I mean, I've had the same discussion. I'm like, look, I'm a new Marine. You're going to haze me? No, I'm not. I'm not going to do that. You want to fight? Let's fight. I'll fight right now. Because I'm not going to do that, because I know that's wrong. And you know you're wrong. So I'll accept the consequences, because I'm not going to do what's wrong. Because I was taught the right way. I was taught the right way at recruiting. And, you know, and every Marine has a choice. We all got choices. You know, I met, and I, you know, told me not to go along, but I got time if you got time.
How cool is that when the commandant of the Marine Corps says, I know you told me not to go along, but I got time. That means he's engaged. Love that. But again, keep your honor clean. You know, so again, the archives of All Marine Radio are incredible. So you go from keep your honor clean to studying in this path of a warrior to talking about, you learn that, you know, when you come in, okay? As you stay in, you ought to progressively broaden and deepen your understanding of mental health, okay, of mental health as it relates to trauma, and not just combat trauma either. You have to broaden the lens, because the suicide that you're dealing with, for the most part, is dealing with pre-existing conditions for young Marines that come in here with trauma, okay, with trauma. Okay, they may not be clinically diagnosed with depression, but they're dealing with it. They're dealing with their trauma. How do you do that? Well, you bring up stuff like the Hanoi Hilton. You listen. This is Elizabeth Smart. Okay, it's amazing. Honestly, I love this piece of audio.
I want people to walk away with a sense of hope, because at the end.
She says it's kind of garbled at the start, but she says, I want people to walk away with a sense of hope because...
The day bad things happen, we don't deserve them to happen, but that doesn't mean that our life is over. That doesn't mean that we need to give up or that we can never be happy again. You can go through hell and you can still have a happy ending. And you can reclaim your life. You can decide who you are. I hope that people come out of it feeling like that gives them the courage, the strength to keep on fighting, to keep on going. Life is worth living. Why did I tell you this story? Those posters on the wall, the children like me, the others who have it worse, the ones who don't come home. I wanted to tell you, as someone who has been through hell, that there still is hope. Find the miracle, hold on to it, and keep going. I'm not cracked. I'm not shattered. I am Elizabeth Smart.
How cool is that? Now, kidnapped at 14, raped on a daily basis, and kept in squalor. She has every ticket that she needs to be dysfunctional. Every one of them. But she's not. Where does that strength come from? A lot of times it comes from your family. And Elizabeth Smart had an intact family that was extremely loving and supportive of her. Not everybody comes from that. Not everybody comes with that. So in terms of progressively deepening and broadening your understanding of trauma and how it relates to people and performance under stress, pretty important stuff. So how do people, right, how do people deal with it? Okay? Now, I have to find the quote that specifically that I'm looking for, where Jeremiah Workman says, "I don't want this. I don't need this. All I want is those three guys back," when he talks about becoming the recipient of a Navy Cross. Right, but here's what we hear from Jeremiah Workman all the time. Things that help him cope, right?
I had a Vietnam vet tell me one time, Jeremiah, he goes, PTSD, it's like having a cage in your brain. It's like having a cage full of monkeys. The goal is to keep the monkeys in the cage, because once them bastards make the jailbreak, all hell breaks loose. So you want to keep them in the cage.
So where does keep the monkeys in the cage come from? Where did Gunnery Sergeant Lance Y hear, "You're never going to get over this"? And, you know, it's kind of rough advice, which makes it sound pretty Marine-like, to be truthful. But it's blunt, and it's true. How did they cope with it, right? Stuff it in the closet and don't go near it. Wall it off, don't go near it. That was a technique that they used. This is Cal Marvin. Okay, this is Cal Marvin talking about, towards the end of the interview. Cal Marvin was a PFC. Cal Marvin. Cal Marvin is from War Road, Minnesota, former Marine, came home, started a windows factory. So when you see Marvin Windows in Home Depot or Lowe's, that guy's a Marine. He was. He passed away years ago and has left it to his family. But just a great guy who went home to a town of about 3,000 people and became the largest employer in the town, helped the town double in size from when he started. Just a great guy. That's who Cal Marvin is. Cal Humphrey was a PFC on Iwo Jima. He is the uncle of a friend of mine named Jess Humphrey, and he came on the program. At the end of the program, I thanked him for coming on, and he talked about that talking about it like he did that day wouldn't bother him much, but it would keep him up a couple nights. And this is how he dealt with it.
I don't give a shit if you tell me, yeah, don't ever call me again. I don't care if you say that. I'll call you and bug you and drag you back on this program.
Yeah, this doesn't bother me much. I'll lay awake a night or two, but then I'll get away in a hurry.
Did you have very many mental problems when you came home? I mean, we call
it. Never had any. But I'll tell you what I did. I didn't go to any conventions.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't gong to the goddamn place where they all went up, you know, got drunk with those. Everybody joined those.
The Legion and the VFW?
The Legions, you know, American right. Legion.
Right.
I joined and spent on my money, and I still do, but I don't go in the joint. And I don't go. You know, I don't go talking war talk to everybody. I just forgot it and left them alone. And I just had two buddies that I visited once in a while when I went to Phoenix. They both lived there, and that was the limit of what I did about it. Now I don't think I didn't dream about it a hell of a lot, but I'd get up and read a book or something. I didn't lay there and suffer. So I got along great.
So you came and came home and tried to get as far away from it as you could.
Just didn't want to be involved in any of that crap.
Interesting. All right, sir. Thank you very much today.
Okay. Well.
And we're gonna do it again in the not too distant future. So.
All right, that'll be fine.
All right.
Okay. Bye bye.
All right. Bye bye. That is Cal Humphrey from
the great state of Missouri. Yeah, that's Cal Humphrey. That's how he did it. Amazing, right? But, so, and this is just me going through my archives, you know, in a very cursory way, me ticking off without even kind of combing through them. Oh, this, oh, this, oh, this, oh, this, oh, this. So the problem I have with developing the class and the content is there's so much powerful stuff in our archives. It's hard. It's hard to narrow it down. But that's Cal Humphrey talking about, how does he deal with it? I don't lay in bed and think about it. I get up and I read. And and ultimately, you know, it leaves my mind after a few days. The Hold on, let me read you an email. Mac, will you play the Elizabeth Smart thing again? Yes, without a doubt. This is Elizabeth Smart. And the movie is entitled I Am Elizabeth Smart. And Mike recommended that I watch it. And it's a great movie. And so what during the movie that she produced, she comes in on either the front side or back side of a commercial. I think it's kind of the as they go to commercial, it fades and then you see her standing there talking, and you hear, and so she does this throughout the movie. I want to say there's six different clips of her during six commercial breaks. And I what I did was I edited two of them together. And the first one, she says, she talked about hope. The last part is, why did I tell you this story? Okay. And when you hear that, that's her. And I love the thing she says about bad things are going to happen to you in life. They don't need to derail your life. And I think it's important because I think this gets to the hope piece. And I lived it with my sister, right? I lived it with my sister, and in a way, Gunny Wise advice to me relative to you're never going to get over this gives you hope. It makes you feel like there's nothing wrong with me, right? Not enough people get that advice, right? From people that get paid a lot of money. So here's Elizabeth Smart again.
I want people to walk away with a sense of hope because at the end.
Okay, so again, the audio sucks, but. And that music, I wish I could cut it out. But this clip starts with, I want people to walk away with a sense that. That's what she's saying.
I want people to walk away with a sense of hope because at the end of the day, bad things happen. We don't deserve them to happen. But that doesn't mean that our life is over. That doesn't mean that we need to give up or that we can never be happy again. You can go through hell. And you can still have a happy ending. And you can reclaim your life. You can decide who you are. I hope that people come out of it feeling like that gives them the courage, the strength to keep on fighting, to keep on going. Life is worth living. Why did I tell you this story? Those posters on the wall, the children like me, the others who have it worse, the ones who don't come home. I wanted to tell you, as someone who has been through hell, that there still is hope. Find a miracle, hold on to it, and keep going. I'm not cracked. I'm not shattered. I am Elizabeth Smart.
Yeah, it makes me smile just listening to it. It's awesome stuff. And so all these things are provoking, right? So pregnant with discussion that you can have with young people. And again, powerful because they're in video format. And I think that's important. This is a clip from Band of Brothers. It's another really interesting aspect. This is a PFC who suffers from I think it's called hysterical blindness. And that means he's overwhelmed emotionally and somehow or other his brain switches off the vision switch, click, and he can't see. And so they've attacked a city called Carrington. They move beyond Carrington. They're dug in a tree line at night. And blight is part of the 25% or 50%, one person in every fighting hole. That are awake. Okay. So he's awake in the middle of the night and he has conversations with a couple of different lieutenants. Okay. So you're going to hear one is a lieutenant named Harry. I can't remember his name, but you'll hear him hop in the fighting hole and I'll kind of paint the picture for you. But the interesting when I heard it thing is what the second lieutenant who comes in, he's not a second lieutenant. I think he's a first lieutenant at the time. His name is Spears. Okay.
How you doing, Blythe? I'm okay, sir.
You could tell Blythe's not okay. Harry hopped down with his Thompson machine gun. He's sitting in the fighting hole, which is deeper than both of them sitting down, right? So it's a deep hole. And he pulls his canteen out.
What happened to the aid station today?
That's when Blythe went blind, right?
Doc really called it hysterical blindness. Thank you, sir. You know what they said in basic? Dehydration's a soldier's worst enemy.
He offered him his canteen. Bly said no. And I think there's booze in the canteen, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
There was.
Game blind. That's all. We're just moving the ball forward 1 yard at a time. Nothing but a game. What is, sir? This? The whole thing? No. Thank you, sir.
Offers him another drink of his booze.
Just a game. Harry.
Dick Winters calls Harry. So it dissolves into a scene where Blythe, in his position of being one of the people that are awake, he hears somebody moaning. Sounds like an American. So he grabs his rifle, he gets out of his fighting hole, which you're not supposed to do at night, and he starts walking around. He starts looking for whoever's moaning.
Flash.
Thunder. Lieutenant.
It was Flash Thunder, right? That's the challenge and password. And out of the tree line comes Lieutenant Spears.
Spears, sir. Where you going, Private?
Check out the noise, sir.
I just came from there. Everything's under control.
Yes, sir.
Some nervous privates in your company.
We do, sir. We do it. We vouch for that.
You just don't see how simple it is.
Simple what is, sir?
Just do what you have to do.
Like you did on D-Day, sir. Lieutenant. Sir, when I landed on D-Day, I found myself in a ditch all by myself. I fell asleep. I think it was air sickness pills they gave us. When I woke up, I didn't really try to find my unit to fight. I just kind of stayed put.
So he's struggling. Am I a coward? I'm terrified. Am I a coward?
What's your name, trooper?
Blythe, sir. Albert Blythe.
You know why you hid in that ditch, Blythe?
I was scared.
We're all scared. You hid in that ditch because you think there's still hope. But Blythe, the only hope you have is to accept the fact that you're already dead. And the sooner you accept that, the sooner you'll be able to function as a soldier's supposed to function. Without mercy, without compassion, without remorse. All war depends upon it.
Now, when I saw that, like, holy shit. But what Lieutenant Spears is saying is that it's not in your hands. And I came back with that understanding after my first deployment to Iraq. And, you know, Mike and I have talked about it. Is it a matter of skill or luck? Mike laughs. It's luck. It's luck. We got to talk about that. We got to talk about that because everybody has these feelings. So there's so much, right, of in terms of mental wellness, in terms of becoming a warrior, in terms of the things you think about that can be imparted with just this great video and audio. It's awesome. We'll take a break. We'll get the gunner on. So, yeah, I just wanted to take you through kind of building post-traumatic winning. What does it look like? And then the best part though is continuing. And I'll do this. I don't know if I'll do it weekly, but kind of give progress reports because building it's incredibly interesting. And but you know the other pieces, the final two pieces that you know you need content for are the things Boulder Crest does. You know. In getting you to know you again, getting to know you to know how you've changed, and then the things you can do with what converts coexisting, which you have to learn how to do, to winning. How do you do that? Why is it important? And so, anyway, so more to follow. So we'll take a quick break. We'll get the gunner on, more of All Marine Radio. Coming up next on Thursday, right here on your home for it, the All Warrior Radio Network.
America's injured and critically ill service members face incredible challenges every day of their lives. Since 2004, the Semper Fi Fund has helped thousands of service members and their families with both immediate and long-term needs. Join the Semper Fi Fund in supporting American heroes. They've given so much. Now it's our turn. Learn how your tax-deductible donation makes a real difference in their lives at SemperFiFund.org.